Hey, and welcome back to Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. My name is Mark Pattison, former NFL player, now climbing the seven summits. Wow, I've done six of the seven of Everest coming up. And welcome to another amazing pod. Okay, the quote for this week that gets me jacked up is from Joe Namath. If you aren't going to go all the way, why go at all? And I think this sums it up for my guest, Jason Redman. This dude is a badass former Navy SEAL of 20 years. And he's been through it all. He obviously went through BUDS. He ultimately was deployed down in South America, Iraq, Afghanistan. And he got into a very, very tough firefight and was ambushed and was really caught between these two lines and bullets flying in all directions. And ultimately, he was shot seven or eight times. One of those was through his side of his ear, out through his nose. And then also his arm was shot up as well. So very difficult. Ultimately, he survived that. Didn't think he was going to, just because they were pinned down for so long and there's so much blood coming out. But I think he said 34 surgeries later, he's been repaired. He obviously still carries the scars of that. But we go through in detail. And really what he's done is come up with a leadership training, all the stuff that he learned through SEAL training and what it takes to be a great leader, starting with yourself and how you can guide and motivate and achieve things you probably never thought you'd be able to do. So really jacked up with my conversation with Jason, very transparent, very honest, and very direct. So you will for sure love this pod. Okay, and if you haven't already done so, please go to iTunes and please rate and review. We are getting more and more of these ratings and reviews, which means we get more popular, and I don't really care about popularity other than it increases the visibility within the Apple world, and that's the reason why it's so important. So you can find and navigate to Finding Your Summit podcast either directly through the Apple world or through my website, www.markpattisonnfl.com. Hit podcast and there's a link, says iTunes, and it will lead you right to where you need to be. Okay. And lastly, I'm really jacked up because we have a new sponsor on the pod, Cascade Mountain Tech, number one trekking pole company in and on the planet. They just crank out tons of these things. Also, they have a bunch of other amazing outdoor products as well, but there's more about that inside the pod, which you will hear. And so, stay tuned for that. So on that note, let's go listen to Jason. Here we go. Hey, everybody. It's Mark Pattison. I'm back with another phenomenal episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding your way. This week is no different. I've got a total stud on the pod. His name is Jason Redman, beaming from Sun Valley, Idaho, all the way to Virginia Beach. Totally jacked to have you on the show. Jason, how are you doing?
Mark, I'm awesome, man. Still on the right side of the earth.
Yeah, well, you're doing good. You know, you've got a lot of things going on. You've got a lot of things going on from your past, which really, I think, has helped propel you in a forward momentum. I love this quote that you have: the mark of a man is not found in his past, but how he overcomes adversity and builds his future. Quitting is not an option. Man, is that true?
Yeah.
It's incredible. I mean, and that's the thing with so many people that, and I want to get into you about kind of, maybe we're going to go forward a little bit and then bounce back, because you're this, you know, 20-year Navy SEAL, very accomplished guy. And what a lot of people, when things get really hard, they quit. And so you're on the speaking tour today, you're going around the country, and you have these messages of overcoming. In fact, you have a podcast, the JR Overcome Show podcast. And certainly when you're a SEAL and when you're up against amazing odds, you know, not just to throw in the towel and sit down and roll over, but fight and fight forward and fight, you know, in the right way. Where did that all come from?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, my family comes from a military background. I've talked to my dad about that because I won't say I had an incredibly hard childhood in any way. I mean, we didn't have a whole lot of money, so grew up kind of poor and definitely getting some hand-me-downs. My parents were divorced. I bounced back and forth. But it's not like I grew up on the mean streets of someplace fending for myself. There was something within me that basically said, if you told me you can't do this, it just fueled my fire even more to do it. So from an early age, I just came up against different obstacles. A smaller kid, you know, even now as an adult, I'm about 5'8 and 170. And when I was young, you know, I literally at about the age of 15, I was probably still that 95-pound weakling. And I told my dad I wanted to play football, and he laughed at me and said, no, you'll just get hurt. So I let that go for about a year. And then finally I told him, I said, hey, I went out for the football team, you know, made like second string tackling dummy. But it's what I wanted to do. And I wanted to get out there, and I laid everything out there. Never was an amazing starting player or anything like that, but it taught me so much about teamwork, overcoming adversity. Went from there, started wrestling, and set my sights on the SEAL teams about the age of 14, 15. And never look back. And man, I had so many people tell me that, you know, they had these ideas that SEALs were these giant, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger looking guys. They told me I'd never make it. It just more fuel to my fire. And it's just something that's always been in me. If you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to do it. It is both a blessing and a curse.
So you go out around the country and you're talking to different people about how they can overcome. So the natural question to me is, and by the way, I think we have a lot of similarities, yet major amounts of differences, right? So I am 6'2", you know, 200 pounds. I did play football. I was on the starting team, but I've never in a second try to take you on. I would know my strengths and weaknesses, and that's not one of them. But, you know, I guess what I'm trying to get at is for you and even for me, I had my own internal motivations. I had a great family growing up, but I was always had to fight and claw for everything that came my way. Even today, every single thing that I'm out there trying to chase you down on the pod and other people around, it's just not an easy thing. And you got to just keep batting, being at the plate, and finally get a few singles. And so for the people who maybe don't have that within and their motivations have been different, how do you coach people? How do you teach people about how to get there? If they don't already have it, if they don't have something that's been gnawing at them all these years, to go out there, reach for it, and then accomplish their goals?
So it's a great question. And it really, I mean, it breaks down into all kinds of different avenues of where we could go. I talk about several different things. I talk about the overcome mindset, and I talk about the three rules of leadership, the most foundational level of leadership. And really, 80% of leadership, I tell people, is your ability to lead yourself. So someone who is not accomplishing their goals, 90% of the time, it's because they're not really leading themselves effectively towards them. So they're not putting the discipline, the structure, they're not willing to make that sacrifice to achieve those goals. So that's kind of first and foremost. And when I work with people, we want to peel that onion back and just, hey, we got to be honest with ourselves. My book was a lot about introspection when I had some failures as a leader. And we all like to think of ourselves as better than most of the time we really are. Then it gets into the overcome mindset. And this is just this idea that no matter what adversity, no matter what problems you encounter, you're going to continue to grind through them. And you were talking about earlier how, you know, a lot of people, and I feel like we're seeing it more and more in this day and age, are quitting becomes the first answer instead of the last answer. It's like we're conditioning a lot of the younger generations in this country and a lot of people that, hey, if it makes you uncomfortable or something offends you, or hey, just quit, because this crazy idea that your comfort is of utmost importance. But the problem is we don't get better through that. We know, science has proven, history has proven, that people get better. They get forged in those harder moments. And that's truly where we learn more about ourselves. We learn how to push ourselves further. We learn how to push through that discomfort. So I talk about that overcome mindset. The third thing that I talk about is, in life, I survived a real-world enemy ambush. And there's a lot of mechanics and there's a lot of tactics that come into the ambush. But just to summarize it in a very quick statement, the point of attack for any ambush, we call it the X. And so in order to take out an enemy, we want to pin them to the X and try and overwhelm them with as much firepower as possible and hold them onto the X until we either can eliminate them or overwhelm them to the point that we can take them out, capture them. The flip side of that coin is if you're on the receiving end of an ambush, like I was, now I'm the one that was pinned down and felt that devastating, overwhelming firepower. Well, as I went through my life and I started working more with wounded warriors and coaching individuals who were struggling, I realized, holy smokes, man, people act the same way in life when they encounter massive adversity or problems or stress as people do in a real-world enemy ambush. And the difference is they're not receiving bullets and explosions, but they might as well be, because inside they're feeling the same way. Yeah. And I call those moments life ambushes. And they can happen in, they come in three different sets. The micro level is what everybody experiences all the time. That micro level ambush is that little voice inside your head that tells you you can't do it. You know, it tells you you're not good enough. You're the wrong race, creed, color. You don't have enough money, whatever. Whatever that little voice is that pins you down and stops you from moving forward. Minor life ambushes are those, what I call schedule disruptions. It's something that comes along that disrupts how your day, week, sometimes even your month is going to unfold. And you're having to deal with that problem. But if we were to fast forward a year or maybe 2 years forward, you wouldn't even remember it happened if somebody brought it up to you. You would have to like really have your memory refreshed. And then of course, there's the major life ambushes that people encounter. And these are the devastating things that will forever leave a mental, emotional, or physical scar on you. So these are, you know, at the lower level, they're relationship failures, you know, divorce. They are business failures, lawsuits within a business. And then they start getting into life-threatening illness or injury to you or members of your family, sexual trauma, the unexpected loss of someone. And at the highest level I've seen is the unexpected loss of a child. These are major life ambushes. The mechanics are all the same, though. People have a tendency when bad things happen, whether it's a very micro ambush, you know, a mental ambush that maybe they're mentally weak, or it's a major life ambush, they tend to get pinned on the X. And they sit on the X and feel sorry for themselves. They don't drive forward. They can't figure out how to build new structure and discipline to try and get off the X. And the longer you sit on the X, it's like quicksand. The longer it pulls you down. So I teach a methodology all about getting off the X. Part of my methodology is something we call the REACT principle. It's an acronym, how to evaluate if you're on the X, and steps on how to get off the X. But that is my motto to people. You have to get off the X. If you are not moving towards your goals, if you are suffering from some sort of major setback, adversity, failure, crisis, you got to get off the X. Most people sit on the X way too long and they get stuck there and they convince themselves they'll never move forward again.
Okay. A lot of stuff to unpack there. So number one, I love your analogy about life ambushes because it's really true. And certainly I've had mine, you know, I've had a relationship blow up and that was very devastating for me. And that's how I was telling you before we started the pod, you know, how I really found the mountains. And so the one thing, and then the next thing you were talking about is really trying to get off the X. And so for me, what I've found is that action creates reaction. And it doesn't matter, you know, sometimes you point your gun in a variety of different directions, and maybe that's not the direction ultimately it goes, but at least you found out that that isn't the direction you want to go versus just sitting in a mud puddle and doing nothing and treading water. And that's, I think, the worst thing you can do. The overcoming mindset, I really feel about, and I've thought this for a long time, and that is that I don't believe that you can develop a strong mind, and then from a strong mind, you develop a strong body. And I think that literally everybody goes through something. That's the reason why the name of this podcast, Finding Your Summit, all about people overcome adversity and find another way. It could literally apply to everybody. And if somebody doesn't raise their hand in a room packed of thousands of people to say that they haven't gone through something, I can guarantee you it's coming, it's on the way, right? And so my philosophy and the way I live my life is that I'm constantly trying to set goals So it's pushed me towards a certain event like Everest for me coming up, and that's a major goal, of course. But if I push myself in certain to certain thresholds, it's then going to help me develop a strong mindset. Because when, you know, when you're up on Everest and things are going to happen and, you know, you got to power through, you can't have your mind quitting on your body, right? You got to like have your body physically has been pushed. It's been stressed. You know how to take it there. And like all these other lower things that you were talking about, the life ambushes of relationships and disease and, you know, people passing away and things like that. They happen to either us directly or people, you know, around us in our near circle. And so you got to be able, and that's one of the reasons why I'm constantly prepping for those moments so I can at least help take some of those things on. Of course, you have to process them and take them in, but I don't know. It's just really helped me in my life in terms of the stress I've had to deal with.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you said something that I believe in 100% also, you know, the physical and the mental, they feed each other together. And I believe, you know, SEAL training is one of those foundational places. I'm sure you felt it. And training with football, you build that overcome mindset. I think that's the basis level of getting out of your comfort zone is doing those things physically. So if you can get out there and really push yourself physically, you're already starting to build that overcome mindset. You're building that mental discipline because your body will always tell you it wants to stop. It'll start to feel pain, you're breathing heavy, you're going through a level of discomfort. But we know, fact beyond fact, I mean, we've seen these amazing stories that the mind can push the body to do at least 10 times more. I mean, this is one of the foundational principles of SEAL training. During Hell Week, we go an entire week without sleep. And you are constantly wet, cold, and moving that entire week. And it is absolutely miserable. I mean, it lives up to its name of Hell Week. And we have about 75, we have about an 80 to 85% attrition rate during Hell Week. But you learn that the whole time your mind's telling me I can't take another step. But if you don't take another step, then they're going to start telling you, are you quitting? And if you quit, you're done. You have guaranteed failure. So you have to put one foot in front of the other and continue to grind and continue to do the evolution. And you begin to learn that even though your body is telling you, I can't take another step, it really can. It's your mind that continues pushing it forward. Your body is trying to protect itself and conserve energy and everything else. But the reality is you can push this machine we run around in right to death.
Hey, this pod is sponsored by Laird Superfoods. So many products to choose from your InstaFuel, your coffee, your tea, your smoothies. And I love the Superfood Creamer and use the hydration powders like the beets, the coconut, the matcha, the turmeric to mix all into my 7 Summit smoothie. And it's so good. Log on to LairdSuperfood.com and get your 20% off when you use the code MarkP20. Okay? So get your Laird Superfood, and I guarantee it will help fuel your journey.
Well, let's talk about your machine just a little bit. So you really talked about that whole metaphor of the X-theory. I think I just renamed it, but the axis, right, where you're either pinning people down or, in your case, you were the person in the center of that X that you had that ambush coming at you when you're in SEALs. And where I think I first read about your story is you got shot 7 or 8 times in the arm and the chest and kind of through the face, at your nose, all kinds of stuff, yet you're still taking on firefight and you didn't just lay down and roll over. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened to you that day, what led up to that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we were on the tail end of our deployment in Iraq in 2007. Which 2006 and 2007 was kind of the second phase of the Iraq war. The surge had occurred. A lot of people may remember or not remember that. And there was another big phrase going around in the media called the Anbar Awakening. And I was operating in Al Anbar. A lot of people remember Fallujah. Fallujah was a very, it was kind of the heart and soul of the Al-Qaeda insurgency in Iraq. And that's where we were operating.
It was serious intensity.
We were doing missions almost every night, some nights, two missions a night. And our job was to capture or kill high level Al-Qaeda and insurgent leaders. And and mid-level leaders. And we were doing it and doing a great job. I mean, as a SEAL, it was everything that I'd ever dreamed of doing. Up to that point in my career, I'd seen some combat in Afghanistan. I'd done quite a few things in South America prior to 9/11, some of the counter-drug stuff. But when I got into Iraq, it was everything I had ever trained for. We were taking really bad people out or capturing really bad people and sending them to prison. So we were towards the tail end of that deployment. We were literally 1 week from going home. And the number one leader for Al-Qaeda was a guy we had been tracking all deployment. We had never got to him. We had missed him several times. And on that night, we got word that he was going to be in a specific location around a specific time, something we call a time-sensitive target. And we launched on that target. I was fortunate enough to be the assault force commander for the actual operation to take down that target. We went in and we took the target down. And as often happens, sometimes information can be a little bit dated. So we got there, nobody was there. We could tell some people had been there. We found quite a bit of munitions, explosives, IED making equipment. So our explosive ordnance disposal men are guys that take care of bombs and stuff, defusing bombs or blowing things up. They took all that stuff. We were going to blow it up and we were going to call it a night. It was about 3 a.m. at this point. Our snipers were watching outward as the, you know, as their job, and started seeing a lot of activity on another house about 150 yards away. I took my team and we maneuvered. We saw some individuals flee out of this house and run into a densely vegetated field. And we were maneuvering up to basically capture them to find out what they knew, you know, why are they hiding? And unfortunately, what we didn't know is these individuals we saw come out of the house were the last part of the security detail, about a 15, 16 man security detail for this Al-Qaeda leader. And he happened to be in that house. And my team and I walked right into a very well executed Al-Qaeda ambush. And my medic was shot through the leg. I was stitched across the body. I took 2 rounds in the elbow, continued to try and shoot and move. One of our guys ran forward, grabbed our medic. The only cover, something that'll actually stop bullets, that we had was like a big John Deere tractor tire that was about 15 yards behind me. And then it was nothing but thousands of yards of open Iraqi desert. So my guys fell back to that point. I was still out front. I tried to lay down some more fire when I had both machine guns turned on me. Took rounds off my body armor, off my side plate. I took rounds off my helmet. I had my left night vision tube shot off. I was taking rounds off my gun. I turned to try and move back to the tire. And it was at that point that I caught a round in the face. It went in right in front of my right ear, like right in front of it, and traveled through my face, exited the right side of my nose, kind of blew out my right cheekbone. What was left of the cheekbone broke and kicked out to the right, vaporized my orbital floor, broke all the bones above my eye, shattered my jaw down to my chin, and knocked me out and pinned me down under this very intense firefight that erupted between my guys behind the tire and the enemy that was about, you know, 45 feet in front of me. So literally for almost 40 minutes, I had a firefight that was occurring about 8 inches above me. At one point in the firefight, I actually got hit in my right side plate, which, amazing, I normally don't wear. And a lot of people would say, my God, why would you not wear your body armor? But one of the things about special operations, we have a lot of latitude. There are certain things that are required. Front plate, rear plate are required. It's not as frequent to get hit in your sides. The only time I used to wear them was when we were in vehicles to give me more protection against IEDs. But if we were on the ground, I wanted to be as light and fast as possible. So you would do things to try and reduce your weight. And that was one of the great things. For whatever reason, that night I wore them, you know, the big man above, he told me, gave me a little voice and said, you should wear your side plates tonight. And sure enough, I took a round right off my side plate laying there. I also, at one point during the firefight, and to this day, I can't tell you why, I took my helmet off as I was laying there. And I took a round directly through my helmet that was laying next to me. So very intense firefight. My team leader ended up calling in fire directly on our position. Because we were pinned down, we weren't going to get out. They were running out of ammunition. I was pinned down out front. And we have an Air Force plane called the AC-130 gunship, an amazing, amazing piece of American engineering technology. And the gunship brought rounds in right behind the enemy and took them out. Literally, we called fire on our position. A little bit of a miracle, we survived. The rounds actually hit and exploded over us. And that is what enabled us to get out and survive, and brought in the medevac, got me and my teammates out, and survived and came home. And the whole time, you know, telling myself, because I was losing a lot of blood. The average human body has about 4 to 5 units of blood. Doctors estimate I lost about 3 units, so over half my blood supply. And they said, it's a miracle you survived. I'll tell you, it was my fitness. And the doctor said this, that it was my fitness that saved me. I was probably in the best shape of my life when I was wounded. But even with that, I knew I was dying. And I kept telling myself, stay awake to stay alive. I focused on that like it was a lifeline. Because I knew, I had been told that the doctors had a save ratio in the combat support hospital, the trauma surgeons, of 90%. If you could show up with a pulse, they had a 90% chance of saving your life. So I grabbed onto that like it was a lifeline, and I would not let it go. So some of that, when I explain to people, there's a little bit of the overcome mindset in that. Just because everything in me wanted to let go. Everything in me wanted to go to sleep. It is the greatest fatigue I've ever felt in my life. I've never felt anything like that. Every breath felt like I had just run a marathon to try and get breath into, you know, my lungs. So needless to say, I made it. And the medical team did a great job. They saved me. And that started a whole new journey of 4 years and 40 surgeries to get put back together.
Well, no, incredible story. So a couple of questions in there. So you, when you're hit in the face, right, went through your ear and out your kind of the side of your nose, more or less exploded your face. You said you got knocked out. How long were you knocked out for?
So to this day, I don't really know. We estimate 5-10 minutes, maybe. That occurred in the first few minutes of the firefight. All of this happened very quickly.
Yeah.
And when my guys saw me go down, you know, that, like we said, we estimate that firefight was between 35 and 40 minutes. So I was out for a little while before I came to. And during a lulling fire, I called out to my team leader, and he was shocked. He said, yeah, we thought you were dead.
So you're my visual is that you're like 15 feet or something away from this big tire where all these other guys are kind of backed up and against. And they can't come over and grab you by the legs and drag you back in because there's this firefight bullet zipping over your head 8 inches above. So they had to just essentially leave you there while these bullets flew over your head and actually hit your helmet, which you had taken off, which is amazing. And then, when you were saying you were dying, is it an actual feeling that you're dying, or are you just self-aware knowing that, okay, I know that I'm seriously hurt. I know I've got a serious amount of blood that's coming out of me. And if it continues to go in this pattern, I need to shut off the valve. Otherwise, I'm going to die. I mean, was it more about that or just like this feeling that this is happening?
Well, it's a little bit of both. You know, we do a lot of extensive trauma medicine training. So I knew that the machine had a leak.
Yeah.
And the machine was pumping my fluids out of my system. And I knew that if I didn't stop that, you know, I was going to have problems. But I actually felt, you know, that process, you know. So when body goes into emergency mode, and when your, you know, fluids go down and the volume is not high enough, the pressure is not high enough, the veins and blood vessels, the flow to your limbs. And that's why people get so cold. When they're going into shock, hypovolemic shock is the loss of blood. What the body's doing is trying to pool as much blood as possible into the core and into the brain and heart and lungs. So I felt that. I felt I was losing feeling in my fingers and my feet. My right arm was okay. I took the rounds in my left arm, but I remember at one point I could not move my right hand. I felt so I was losing the ability to move, feel every breath I took. Just it felt like 10,000 pounds were on my chest, and it got harder and harder to think. I felt like I was thinking through a shroud, you know? So I was just, I realized as this was happening, you're dying, man. That's what's happening. You're losing the amount of blood you need to function.
Yeah, just absolutely incredible. I want to ask you, so now that you got, you know, you got bullets all over the place and your face is, you know, you, like you said, you had to go through 40 different surgeries to help repair. I think you've lost some of your sense of smell along the way. I don't know if that's still, you know, the case, but there was this really cool thing that I was reading about, and that is this orange sign that you, when now you're laying in this hospital somewhere and you had written down and in kind of almost like this chicken scratch crayon that I was reading, which ultimately got to President Bush, but it's basically saying, don't flip and walk in here and feel sorry for me. You know, I'm lucky to serve. I'm lucky to be here. And it's all about perspective. And so I'm going to make it. I'm going to be just fine. But, you know, it goes on. I'm obviously paraphrasing this right now. But it, like, at what point were you laying there? Was it somebody else that came in and was crying and teary up around you that, like, hey, listen, you know, screw that. I got to make sure that there's a statement when people come in here that they're going to understand what they're walking into.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I had some individuals that came into the room, and it happened at a point in time where I always tell people, hey, I didn't launch out of that hospital bed in Baghdad with this, man, I'm just going to conquer the world after these devastating, grievous injuries. I mean, there was a period of time, there was about a week, I would say, maybe even a little bit longer, that I was dealing with. I was on the X. So I stepped out of this enemy ambush and I was on the second part of this life ambush, which was, and my story is rather unique. I mean, if you read my book, The Trident, it's really a story of leadership. And at one point earlier in my career, I had failed as a leader. And I almost got myself kicked out of the SEAL teams. And then I did the unthinkable. I redeemed myself in a community where we do not allow failure. We don't tolerate it. And it's really hard for a leader in our community to come back and redeem himself. And I had done it. And here I was on the back up on the track to finishing my career where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do. And I got severely injured. And laying in that hospital bed, thinking through all that was really hard. And doctors telling me, hey, we're going to probably have to amputate your arm. You'll never operate again. You're probably going to be out of the military. All these different things. So I was really kind of struggling with what had happened and the way forward. And it was when those individuals were in my room, there was the second thing, there was something else that happened, but it was when they were in my room and they were expressing this pity. I had drifted off a little bit after they had come in to visit with me. And I was in that subconscious state where you're drifting off, but you can still hear sounds, conversations, the TVs in the background. Yeah. And they started to have a conversation with themselves about what a pity that we send these young men and women off to war. They get battered and broken. They're never going to be the same. They're never going to be whole. They're never going to be able to function in society again. And they finished their conversation, or they were leaving as they were having this conversation. When my wife came back, this was playing inside my head. And it made me angry the more I thought about it. And I wrote to her because I couldn't talk. I was trached. I was wired shut. And I wrote to her, I said, never again is somebody going to come into my room with sadness or sorrow, feeling sorry for me, having pity. Because, man, it took everything in me to not have pity on myself. Yep. You know, I was still struggling to figure out how I was going to drive forward. But I'll be honest, it was kind of this catalyst, this launch point off the X. It was like, hey, if you know, you're the only one that can control if you're going to feel sorry for yourself or not. You know, you could either be a victim and sit here and wallow in your sorrow, or you can be a victor and drive forward and just be relentless. And I chose the latter. And it was in that moment I wrote out that sign. And I told my wife, nobody else coming in this room and feeling sorry for me, because I refuse to feel sorry for myself.
Hey, I'm excited to introduce our new partner of the pod, Cascade Mountain Tech, an outdoor brand from the Pacific Northwest, which is where I'm from, that offers a great selection of trekking poles. They're incredible. Super coolers, camp chairs, LED lighting, and much more. Right now, Cascade Mountain Tech is offering 15% off your first order by using the code FINDINGYOURSUMMIT15, that is, FINDINGYOURSUMMIT15, when you check out at CascadeMountainTech.com.
Well, there's a couple things in there again. I think, you know, what I started to say, which I did say, you wrote this sign because you didn't want people feeling sorry for yourself. I can only imagine what that must have been like for you, as you're sitting there with bandages all over your face and your arm is half off. And it was just a very difficult thing for you to move through. So I can certainly understand from your perspective how that would be very distracting, yet, you know, also a catalyst at the same time of, like, it has to start with you. You can't have other people in trying to, like, either sugarcoat it or feeling sorry for you. It has to start with you. Like pretty much everything that we've been talking about, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, you got to be a self-proponent of action. You can't, I mean, although people do inspire us, people come to me, they've come to me over the years and say, hey, Mark, help me out with this diet, or what should I do to get in better shape or whatever. And I'm absolutely willing to give you the roadmap, but at the end of the day, it has to start within. And if you don't have that self-drive, that self-motivation to get to that next, you know, that next level, then it's probably not going to happen. And so whatever that is, whatever that thing is for each person, including myself and probably for you, you know, you need to tap into what's going to motivate you and be that driver to fuel that, to get you to a different spot. And in your case, you're laying on your back, you know, all shot up and everything else. And the 40 surgeries, I'm sure there's plastic surgery and rewiring and building and all kinds of stuff that you had to go through. And each one's just another step and another step and another step to get you to that point. But ultimately you do get to that point, and now you're moving on to kind of bigger and better things within the SEALs, right? So you ultimately end up going off to a graduate school to get your MBA, and you went to Old Dominion. So how does this chronology of like what you're thinking about and getting back into the game and staying with the military and all these different things, I mean, how are these pieces all coming together?
Yeah, it was just continuing to drive forward. Now, I got to reverse the timing a little, because that school, Old Dominion, happened before my injuries.
Okay.
So, but what did happen afterwards was that I chose to stay in the military. The military said, hey, Jay, you're so banged up, we'll medically retire you and get you out. And I said, hell no, man. I came in to do 20 years, and actually, I will admit, in the beginning, the first couple of years, my sole goal was to get back operational. I wanted to be an operational SEAL again and get my career back on track. So I focused on rehab. Every surgery, the doctors used to laugh at me, because as soon as the surgery was done, I'd literally be in the recovery room, and the doc would come out to debrief me, and I'd say, Doc, let's schedule the next one right now. You know, what's as soon as we can do the next surgery, so that I knew the faster I got done with all the surgeries, the sooner I could push myself to my new 100% to get back operational. That ended up, unfortunately, just never happening. My arm was never able to be fixed to the point where I could continue to be operational. The nerve damage, and I lost. It's a miracle I can do what I can with my arm now, mm-hmm. but it never got back to that point. So that was a hard day, but I said, well, you know what? I still want to finish my career. This was at about 18 years in my military career, and 20 years is what's considered a full military career. So I said, well, I want to finish. So they allowed me to do that. I ended up working in different SEAL training. I worked in operations. I worked different special projects, and I ended up retiring at about 21 years. And it was at that point that I realized my career as a SEAL officer, for the most part, was over. The SEAL teams are built around combat. And there are certain positions that you have to fill as a SEAL leader. And unfortunately, because of my injuries, I wasn't able to fill those. So I kind of they would have let me continue to stay in, but I realized I wouldn't have moved around due to where I was at.
Yeah.
So I decided at that point. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say you just went off for just a second. The bottom line is you were saying that you pretty much peaked out. I mean, you couldn't really advance your career any further for the most part, and probably doing the things that were most passionate to you. And so that then leads to this question. When you look back, and I did the same thing with my NFL career. You know, I wasn't in it for 21 years. I wish I would have, but just not so much about the NFL, but also just football, my football life in general, which did take about 20 years when you take all the different levels that are involved. But when you look back on the SEAL, I mean, you look back and you say, Navy SEALs did this for me. What is that?
I mean, I would say the SEAL teams taught me everything about who I am, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I don't think there's any other forging out there that brings a group of individuals together and forges them into a team quite like SEAL training does, and then takes you from there and forges you into a leader if you choose to be so. But even at the lowest level, every SEAL out there, even if a guy who shirks, you know, any kind of responsibility, there's still a high level of leadership, the self-discipline required to even be a SEAL, much less to be a SEAL leader. So those were the things, teamwork, leadership, and the overcome mindset. I mean, I don't know where I'd be in my life if I hadn't gone through that. I mean, obviously we would say, well, you probably wouldn't have been shot up. Somebody could say that to me. But I don't know. Life works in interesting ways. Maybe I would have been run over by a car at 33 years old.
Yeah.
And I try and tell people, a lot of people say to me, well, Jay, I'm not a SEAL, so I don't need to lead like that. And I'm not going to have a team like that. People's lives aren't on the line, and I'll never have an overcome mindset like that. But that's not true, because it's up here. It's in your mind. It doesn't have anything to do with your muscles. Obviously, your mind leads the physical, but anyone has that ability, and that's what I speak on. I tell them, you know, the lessons that I learn, they're not SEAL lessons. They're human lessons, and they're lessons that anybody can apply in their life if they're willing. You know, you may never get to the level where, you know, you're having to lead and be a member of a team or have the overcome mindset required to be a SEAL, but you absolutely unequivocally can lead and be a member of a team and have the overcome mindset of being an incredible achiever, an incredible entrepreneur, an incredible football player, whatever. You have that ability. It's just a choice. It's a choice to endure that discomfort and that sacrifice and to build in that structure and discipline to make it happen.
Yeah. For me, I look on my side of the fence, which is, you know, again, going back to football, and I always had that desire. Obviously I had some talent, but I didn't know what that really meant to propel myself, because I'd never had the kind of leadership and the structure I needed to thrive and reach places that I never thought were possible. And so I think that's the commonality. You know, you have that drive growing up. You had some talent. You wanted to go do certain things. Probably some of your mentorship was your grandfather and your dad, both in the military, and your sister. But at the end of the day, you know, when you get thrust into the BUDS, which is the SEAL basic training of trying to get through and just see if you can qualify, and then your 20-year run, 21-plus year run at being a SEAL, all the structure, all the different leaders, all the people that influenced you in terms of what's right, what's wrong, what you can do, what you can't do, what you can overcome, you know, that really filtrated into your mind, your body, your soul in terms of who you are today. And so it's really taking that whole package, I think, and then delivering that gift back and paying it forward to people who also need that same type of leadership. And it doesn't matter how old you are. We all need guidance. And I think I'll throw in there, every day I've got podcasts or audio tapes in my ears trying to learn something from somebody on how they did something that maybe I can learn from, that's maybe going to help me when I'm trying to take that final step going up Mount Everest. That it's really going to, I know that will do nothing but benefit. And so if you're not learning and growing, you're dying. And I really believe that wholeheartedly. So you have a book, and the name of this book is The Trident, The Forging and Reforging of a Navy SEAL Leader. I know this has nothing to do with it. I was up in Seattle over this past weekend, and I was at this place having this brunch with my mom on Mother's Day. And all of a sudden, one of the guys runs over to me and he goes, "Hey, look, we have this view at Puget Sound, which is the salt water just right off the coast of Washington. And there was the Trident submarine sailing by." And like, oh my gosh, you know, say like a nuclear submarine, you know, zipping by. But what essentially, you know, in a nutshell, what is this book all about?
This book is a leadership journey. It is a story of one young man who had probably romanticized ideas of being a warrior and a leader, and who failed at a pretty good level, and probably would have failed and recovered fairly quickly if he had owned it and just embraced the fact, hey, I failed, I made some bad calls, let me learn from it. But he didn't. Ego got in the way, and he finally humbled himself through a very long, hard journey, and redeemed himself. And then only to find himself in another situation, or to find myself in another situation where I was severely wounded and I had to overcome that. So that is really the story of the book. It is a journey of leadership, a journey of coming to understand, you know, what I talk about, the three rules of leadership: lead yourself, lead others, lead always. And intermixed all the way through there at all levels is how we have to overcome the different levels of adversity we encounter in life.
I love that. I love that. I'm going to get this book. And so I'm sure that people can find this book on your website and or Amazon.
Yeah, they can. It's at all the major bookstores. And if they'd like a signed copy, they can go to jasonredmond.com. Just make sure you write in the notes if you want me to personalize it.
Okay, cool. I want to go back on something here because this is important. And it's just part of my, you know, curiosity on the star power. But you did win the Purple Heart, Bronze Star, a bunch of other cool awards for all the different things that you did to serve this country. And, of course, we thank you for that. What was that like when you were in the Oval Office?
Amazing. You know, I've been very fortunate. I've met a lot of famous people. I am not starstruck easily. I feel like human beings are human beings. Some have been blessed with more talent in certain areas. And that has enabled them to be very successful, coupled with hard work. But when I went to the White House, I mean, everything you've ever seen, I mean, you see all these movies. Okay, so the last thing, so everything you see in the movies is, it's incredible. It really is like that. You roll up to the White House, and I mean, all the guards, and you go through all this security, and then you go into the building. And I just remember when we were standing outside the Oval Office and they opened the door and President Bush was standing right inside there, and you're looking at the presidential seal on the floor and all these iconic things that you've seen on TV or seen in movies, and the Resolute desk he was standing in front of. So absolutely humbling and really amazing. And, you know, a very proud moment for me, for my kids to be there and to meet the president. My mom came with me also. So really an amazing moment. And he was so down to earth and just so cordial and just, I was really impressed as a leader. This was in October of 2008, and this was right at the height of the financial crisis in our country. And I know he probably had 10,000 things running through his mind. Yeah. You know, all these major decisions I know he probably needed to make prior to leaving the Oval Office. And he spent 35 minutes with me and my family, and just, he didn't act like he had another care in the world other than being focused on us. Wow. So really an amazing moment and just incredible.
Yeah, no, it sounds like an amazing, I've been in the White House twice. I've not met the president, so I've still got my Hail Mary chance, you know, somewhere down the road, but I'm not sure how that's going to happen. So, okay, well, listen, where can people find you? And again, I also want to mention, I'm going to brag on you for a minute. You're a very dynamic speaker. You've got a great message all about leadership, people overcoming adversity, some of the same stuff I talk about. And you're doing it in a really cool way. You've got this book out there we just talked about. And where would be the platform that people can find you to book you and hear you speak?
Yeah, jasonredmond.com. Go there and you can find out about my speaking, my coaching, consulting. You can buy signed copies of the Trident, or you can buy some of my Overcome merchandise. I have a group coaching program, the Overcome Army, where once a week I run a class, 30-minute class and Q&A, and then the people are together in a private group working on being better, implementing things we talk about. In December, my new book comes out, Overcome, to build what we're getting, how to get off the X, how to both deal with a life ambush if you're in one, how to lead yourself out of one, how to lead others out of one, and lastly, how to prepare yourself so that you're always ready for future life ambushes that are coming.
Well, look, as we talked about a little bit ago, ambushes happen to every single person. It's just a matter of when you're going to get that card drawn in your name. So, all right, my friend. Well, listen, so thankful and grateful that you came on the pod. You're amazing service to our country, and now you're out, you know, really trying to power it forward to pay it forward to others that really need your words of wisdom and guidance on how they can be the best they can be. So thank you.
Mark, absolutely, man. Thanks so much. And hey, good luck on Everest. I can't wait to hear. I followed you on Instagram, so I want to see pics up there. And if anybody else, that's the other thing. I'm real active on Instagram. So
love that. All right. He is Jason Redmond, former Navy SEAL. Thank you, buddy.
All right, Mark. Thanks, man.
Hey, thank you so much for dropping in and listening to another amazing episode of Finding Your Summit. Truly incredible people doing spectacular things in life. And I hope you were inspired just like I continue to be. Look, I am super grateful that you came in and subscribed to this pod and would be more than appreciative if you gave the show a ratings and review on iTunes. Trust me, it matters. And then also go share it with your friends, of course. Okay, until next week, go do something great. And remember, it takes a little more to make a champion. Bye. Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.